You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This podcast is a proud member of the FanHub 100. Football without fans is nothing, so we've partnered with FanHub to put fans first. Search FanHub app to play your part in the journey.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 85 of the Unholy Trinity podcast in association with FanHub, where the fans come first, and our local business sponsor, Vici Clo. I'm delighted to say we're doing something a bit different this week with our game against Crystal Palace a couple of days away. We brought on a fan from the opposition, and it's a big welcome to Ali from Pride of South London Fan TV.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to the chat and the game. Hoping to get a little bit more luck than the last time we played you. I think the last time we played you was the handball by Joel Ward, and then they changed the rule after the game. Is that right?
I think, yeah. I think we've all been there, haven't we, at some point over the course of the last couple of seasons where things have gone against us, and then they changed the rule the week after. It seems to be a common theme, unfortunately, with the Premier League. But let's jump straight in there, Ali. You know, it's a game we were just discussing before we started recording about, you know, there's a bit riding on it for ourselves. There's all to play for, especially seeing Chelsea get beaten by Sam Allardyce's West Brom 5-2 today. But how's it going with Palace this season? You know, you're sitting 13th in the table. You're safe by all accounts. What are your thoughts on how it's going for Palace?
When you look at it on paper, it looks good, doesn't it? I mean, as you said, 13th, we're actually 4 points off 10th going into this weekend, we were anyway. However, I mean, it's been pretty grim, to be honest. The style of play has just been really poor, less than 40% possession in most games. And I think most of the fan base are now counting down the games in the hope that Roy Hodgson's contract's not renewed. That's kind of the big hope. No disrespect to him. He's obviously done a really good job. And if you're an outsider looking in, you would think, what have Palace fans got to moan about? They're probably where they should be. But anyone who watches us or plays us kind of wonders, how on earth are they even this high? How have they got this amount of points? And we don't really know ourselves. So it'll be more interesting for us off the pitch than on the pitch, I think, for the rest of the season while we wait for that news on Roy Hodgson. Because I think if they extend his contract by another year, I think they're going to have to open up a Samaritan line for Palace fans, because I don't think we can take another year of Roy Ball, to be honest.
Haven't you got quite a number of players as well to contract in the summer? There's a hell of a lot of players whose deals are up for renewal, aren't they, as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's a ridiculous situation, and that's not Roy Hodgson's fault. That's the, you know, you've got to look at Steve Parish, the chairman and the director of football, Dougie Friedman, there, because to have 10 key players at least contract coming up, yeah, I mean, how does that affect their mentality going into the last period? I mean, Andros Townsend was on TalkSport the other day saying that as he was coming on to games, he was thinking, he said, I've got to come on and prove myself to earn a contract. But I mean, the flip side of that is, what happens as we're winding down towards the end of the season, and a few of these players have got deals set up with other clubs, they're going to be going to go into games thinking, I don't want to get an injury to mess up this deal that I've got with another club. So it's not a healthy situation at all, to be honest.
That is a double-edged sword, that. You can look at it almost like the Aaron Ramsey transfer or the saga at Arsenal to Juve, isn't it? Players will look at it as being, okay, if we go with no transfer fee, I can demand more of my wages as well. So it gives them a better strength when they're speaking to other clubs, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of them, I mean, Patrick Van Aanholt, for example, is a player who I want to go. We've got Tyrick Mitchell, a really good young left back, and I think it's time that Patrick Van Aanholt moves on. But I mean, he's a Dutch international. So, for example, Galatasaray are linked, Champions League. So, as you said, if they haven't got a transfer fee, he could be getting a high contract there. So, Mitchell gets injured and Patrick Van Aanholt has to play, then is he going to be putting it in 100% in the last few games? I don't want to question his desire mentality. I think he's had a good career at Palace, but it has to be psychologically there, even in the back of their heads, doesn't it?
100%, yeah. I do like Mitchell as well, by the way. I've seen a bit of him. He's a talented kid. Looks a good player.
Yeah, he doesn't really get talked about as much as some of our other players. I mean, obviously, the big talking point in our youngsters is Eze now. Obviously, he's not from our academy, but we signed him and he played for the under-21s in the week. So Mitchell's kind of gone under the radar a bit, but he is, yeah, he's a very promising left-back and he has kept Patrick Van Aanholt out for a large proportion of the season, to be honest.
It's interesting, and we're going to pick up a bit more obviously on Palace in a second as well. But Peter, if we bring you in there, based on obviously what Ali's saying there about the potential unrest at Palace, it seems with the current situation, that's something that we can possibly take advantage of when we play on Monday night.
Yeah, from a selfish point of view, you absolutely hope so. You hope it's sort of like the right time to play Palace because they're an interesting team, aren't they? I mean, you go back to sort of the start of the season, you look at that United away game where you beat United at Old Trafford. Fair enough, United weren't quite on it, but Palace were great, you know, really organised, really aggressive, really up for it. Everybody seemed to be on the game. You know, Zaha didn't let the occasion get the sort of best of him. I know he missed the pen and put the rebound in. Ayew was really sharp. Or was it a retake? Did he have to retake the pen?
I think he retook it.
It was a controversial retake, wasn't it? But, you know, you're one of those teams where, you know, you've had a few famous victories, haven't you, against some of the big boys and some good results, you know, against, obviously often against Liverpool in previous years, City, ourselves a couple of times.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the things where Hodgson should get credit for, and I don't think he gets enough credit for from our fan base, is his record against the top six has been really good. I mean, it's better than Arsenal's record against top six in recent seasons, which some people might say it's not hard. But I think that's what gives me a little bit of hope going into this game, is that he does yield points from games where you don't think we would. And tactically, he is more astute and clever than our fan base recognise sometimes. So you are right. I mean, that game in particular at Man United was probably the highlight of the season, and Wilfred Zaha going back to a team who put as much effort into developing him as Aubameyang puts into getting to training on time and scoring two goals. That was a beautiful moment for us. Yeah, so probably one of the few highlights that you picked up on there.
Yeah, I think Roy, when he got the England job, I wasn't exactly enamoured with it, you know what I mean? And England under Hodgson wasn't exactly, you know, beautiful football. I mean, he was always very much known as a pragmatic coach. I mean, his stint in Italy showed that as well. I think that's probably suited to him, that league, because a lot of teams, you know, set up to basically not concede and play pragmatic football. I think the reason he's had success against the so-called bigger teams who want the ball more or possession is he likes that, doesn't he? He likes teams to come on, and you've obviously got the players to counter. You know, you've always had pace on the counter-attack, and obviously you've added Eze to the likes of Townsend and Zaha. Eze looks a real talented kid. I was interested to see how he was going to do this season. Obviously, you took a punt on him, and I think he's had a mixed season, but he showed flashes of brilliance, hasn't he, as well? I mean, that goal he scored, was it against Fulham, was it? Was it against Fulham?
Sheffield United, where he
Sheffield
ran.
Sheffield United, yeah,
that was a very good goal. I think, like any young player, he's inconsistent. And yeah. Also, I think the way he's used by Roy doesn't help him. He usually plays on the left-hand side. And usually in Roy's system, he usually ends up tracking back a lot. But he has added, and what he's added as well is someone else for the team to focus on. So the opposition can't just put three men on Wilfred Zaha because they've got someone else to think about. But the other one key to our counter who's fit and isn't always fit is Jeffrey Schlupp. And he doesn't get talked about, but he is absolutely essential to our counter-attack and our transition, because without him, we don't get up the pitch as quickly and we just end up sort of camped in our own half. So I think Schlupp, Eze and Zaha all fit makes me think that we can play our counter-attacking style to effect on Monday.
Yeah, and Benteke's scoring again, hasn't he, recently as well? He's been looking a bit sharper.
Yeah, I mean, Benteke, I mean, I think you asked me before I came on here to think of our sort of, you know, our danger men, and to put Benteke down as one of our danger men, I never thought I'd be right in that. I thought that, you know, if he said that to me at the start of the season, I'd have said there's more chance of Harry Maguire taking his next summer holiday back in Mykonos. But I think Benteke, you know, I think we still don't feed him enough. He doesn't get the right service from us. And he's, to be fair to him, putting away important goals this season. But if we actually got some decent crosses into him regularly, he could be doing even more, because he's sort of more of the Benteke that you saw all the way back at Aston Villa, except probably slightly less mobile.
And well, I mean, with Benteke, I always said, even when he moved to Liverpool never ever played to Benteke's strengths. And the thing with him, he is so good in the air, and he's always a constant threat. And if you're going to sign that kind of play, you've got to play to their strengths. And he certainly, you know, he seems to turn a bit of a corner recently. You mentioned, obviously, Eze, obviously a talented kid, Zaha, as we know. We've been linked with him over numerous seasons, potentially coming to Goodison Park. But you must, you know, you mentioned about hope that you can get something from the game, the way, obviously, Hodgson might set up, and he's got a decent record against the better sides. But you must have a lot of hope going into playing as a Goodison Park, because our record is so poor this season. You know, I think we've lost 7 of the last 10 at Goodison Park, which is, you know, it's just totally unheard of for us to be losing that number of games at home.
Yeah, I look at it as well. You've lost to, I think it's Fulham and Newcastle and Burnley at home this season. They're all teams similar to Palace in that we set up defensively and try and catch you on the break. So yeah, that I looked at that and I thought there's a lot of hope here in that we could counter you effectively, because I think you find it hard to break those kind of teams down. And I think key to your win at Selhurst Park was Rodriguez. Sort of, if we sit the way we do, eventually he will find an intelligent pass that will find its way through. If he's fit and he's playing, then I would fancy you, because I don't think we can sit back and just let him spray balls all game. I think he'll find something within the 90, like he did, I think, in your first goal at Selhurst Park. But I mean, is he going to play? Because he has been a bit inconsistent in his appearances, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's back, isn't he? He's fully fit.
Carlo gave him quite a number of weeks off, and then he used the international break to get back to full fitness. So judging by what Carlo was saying in the press conference, James is back and rearing to go, which is great for us. I mean, we've said it all season that the one sort of key defining factor, I think, in our wins and quality performances this season has been James, because he can do something out of nothing. You know, and that's the beauty of having a player like him. So he is fit. Olsen should start in goal. Pickford is injured. Obviously, Calvert-Lewin and Charlison, the two lads up top, who are obviously a massive threat. But it's great for us. But one player that I want to mention, which you might be a bit unaware of, Ali, is Jean-Philippe Gabamon, who's been out for 18 months now. He made around about a game and a half worth of appearances for us before injury struck him. And from our point of view, Pete, you know, and from, to be fair, I said this on Twitter yesterday, from Gabamon's mental health point of view, it's fantastic to see him back. And Carl said he's now ready to be involved with the squad on a match day. It must be great for the lads to now finally be back amongst the first team squad and good to go, hopefully.
Yeah, well, it's as good as a new signing, isn't it? And Carlo pretty much said that, didn't he, in his comments, because he's played such little football for us. And I think everyone needs to remember, you know, Gabamon came in as the replacement for Idrissa Gana Gueye, in that, you know, sort of defensive shield role, someone that can carry the ball, someone that's neat and tidy, someone that's really aggressive. So for us to lose him, I think we said it was probably a massive part at the end of Marco Silva's tenure. And it's probably leaked into other seasons as well. But I think probably the place Evertonians need to be in is not to put too much pressure on him, you know, to maybe accept that he's going to get a few appearances off the bench probably for the rest of the season. I'd be really surprised to see him start. I think the club are going to be really, really careful with him, not throw him straight back in. So hopefully he can come off the bench and get some minutes. But from a mentality point of view, both for him, but for, I think, the squad in general, you know, to have him, you know, sort of back in the sort of, you know, the 18 and the team, the sort of the match day team, I think is a real, real boost. And I think, like we were saying in the last pod, that's all the rest of the season is now, trying to get the level as high as possible. And, you know, really we need to be looking at winning every game and sort of keeping in there, especially over the next, you know, the next two are must win, but probably the next five games are ultimately going to decide, are we in Europe or not?
Mm-hmm. I think the thing with Gabamon is as well, Lee, is like Pete was saying there, in regards to the pressure from the fans, it's massively important that we don't expect too much too soon. You know, we're probably going to see him in, you know, little bits and pieces, 10 minutes, 15 minutes here and there. He might even pick up a couple of little niggles because he's not gone full pelt playing football for 18 months. So, you know, from a physical point of view, there could be a few little breakdowns here and there, which is to be expected. But as fans, we've got to make sure that we stick with him. You know, we let him sort of develop and progress at his rate. And, you know, if he has a few little niggles and setbacks, you know, we don't start slagging him off kind of thing, because, you know, that's the worst thing in the world for a player who's played so little football in the last year and a half.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think we'd all expect he's going to have a few cameos here and there. There's no way I'd expect him to start any games between now and the end of the season. He was the sixth that Marco Silva always wanted once Gay left. And unfortunately, we never fixed that solution. I know Alan's come in. Alan's done a decent job in that role, although as fans, most of us would probably want him pushing a bit higher up the pitch, winning the ball higher up the pitch. And if Gabamin, you know, can stay fit, ready for the start of next season, it might save us a few quid on signing another midfielder. Because for me, you'd have him sitting in the sixth role and have, as I said, Alan roaming in front of him, winning the ball a bit further up the pitch. And then potentially, you know, Gomez in the 10 or Decore as part of a three. Suddenly our midfield then with Decore, Gomez, Alan, Gabamin, you know, looks a pretty solid midfield. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It will be interesting to see, you know, how he phases him in. Carlo clearly likes him. You know, he's spoken highly of him when he has played in training. So, you know, good luck to the lad. Let's hope he doesn't pick up any serious injuries again, because, you know, players' careers are very, very finite, aren't they? And he's been very unlucky since he's come here.
Yeah, 100%. And as I said, it's so important that we do stick with him, and hopefully he can become a pivotal part of that midfield, especially going into the new season. But Ali, I'm going to come to you. What are your thoughts in terms of how the game's going to finish? What's your prediction for the game? Do you think Palace can get something from it?
I think looking back on the first game against you, it was very early on in the season, but I thought we matched you well in that game and probably felt a little bit unlucky in the handball incident, although I did think you played very well. I thought Rodriguez had a really good game that day. But I think, like I said, pointing out to the kind of teams that you've lost to at Goodison Park, that does give me hope. And this is, I've been a little bit negative on Ray Hodgson, obviously, at the start of this pod, but this is the kind of game where he yields a result. I think it will be a 1-1 draw.
Interesting, mate. What's your, just out of interest, though, while you're on, what's your thoughts on Everton this season? I know you've mentioned Rodriguez a couple of times. We all rate him. He's obviously got class when he's fit.
Yeah.
Is there any other guys at Everton that you like the look of?
I think, Godfrey has been a good signing for you at the back, hasn't he? The 20 million one from Norwich. That's a really shrewd signing, I think. I think you've gone up a notch in terms of the project with your new owner and the finances and Carlo Ancelotti. And I just think it goes about saying, it's so obvious, but the next period of football before the end of the season is just so big for your project. If you even get Europa League football, I thought you recruited well last summer. I thought Decore was a great signing. I thought you alluded to Alan. I thought you definitely improved in the central midfield area. I think you could go up another notch, though, if you get European football in sort of the calibre of players that you attract. I've got to be honest, like, no disrespect, but when there were the sort of the Wilfred Zaha links to Everton a few seasons ago, I kind of thought, really, is he going to go there? They've not got European football. But if you came in this summer, I'd be worried, because I'd be thinking Carlo Ancelotti, Calvert-Lewin, Rodriguez, play alongside these players, European football. I think actually that's a really good move for him. So I think you're definitely moving in the right direction. But are the opposite to us, whereas, you know, we've got nothing to play for. You've got so much to play for in the next sort of however long it is till the end of the season. And that will probably dictate a lot of where you go next season, obviously, because if you get European football, I think your project just keeps accelerating. And you've definitely got the, I mean, you've got a great manager, haven't you? That's obvious.
I mean, Ancelotti's been a real coup for us, definitely. I mean, if you look at what City did when they came into cash, that was pre-FFP, they were allowed to accelerate a lot quicker. But even then, it took them time to, you know, to get to that sort of level. And now for us, trying to do it, obviously, within FFP, I know FFP is now coming to an end, but trying to do it in that, it's a lot harder to break into, you know, into that so-called top six. But I think Ancelotti...
Man City weren't, were they? I mean, they were breaking the rules and they didn't even get really punished for it, did they?
Well, yeah, there you go then. Yes, it shows you how redundant it was. But it was just interesting to see what players you like to look up from a sort of Palace perspective. I think you mentioned Calvert-Lewin there. You know, if you were to ask us as fans, you know, we all thought he was a talented kid, but we didn't think he'd hit the heights that he has done this season. You know, he's really come on. It looks like he's definitely cemented a place in the Euros as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think he's really incredibly unlucky to have Harry Kane in front of him, to be honest. And I think really you've definitely strengthened in that central midfield area, and that's where I'm really worried for the weekend, because Roy tends to go 4-4-2, and I think this is the kind of game where we'll get outrun and outpassed through the middle, and this is the game he should play 4-2-3-1 and be flexible, but he won't be. And do you know what? I actually really, really wish one of your former players was fit this weekend, and that's James McCarthy, because I'd love him just sitting in front of our back four this weekend and giving us a bit of an extra layer of protection. But he's not fit, unfortunately. But I think Everton, I've been really impressed this season, definitely going in the right direction. But you're kind of holding your breath at the moment, aren't you? Waiting to see how the rest of the season pans out.
100%. It's always interesting, like Lee said, to hear from fans of other clubs about what they think of Everton, because obviously we have a very biased opinion, and we know what we think's good and what have you. But it is interesting to hear. But Lee, let's have a prediction from you.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it'll be a tight game. It won't be an easy game at all. I think Palace is always a tough game. They've got some talented players. You know, we've talked about them just then. I think Carlo won't be naive either. You know, I think we'll have the majority of the ball. But when we have had the majority of ball against teams like this, we have struggled to break them down. So James, for me, could be the difference in this game. I'd imagine we throw him straight in, because he is capable of doing something out of nothing. He is capable of unlocking a 4-4-2 formation. So I think if we can get an early goal and the players relax a little bit, I think we could win. For me, I'd say 2-0. But that early goal's key. If we don't and the game's tight, it can go anyway after that then.
There's a stat about Palace that if we go 1-0 down, I think probably over 90% of those matches we end up losing. We can't get back into it. Because obviously then Roy's plan A is gone in sitting back and then catching a team on the breaks. Then he has to go for it and he doesn't have a plan B. So yeah, the first goal will be massive in this game.
Yeah.
Pete?
Yeah, I think like the lads, I think it'll be a really tight game. I do think it'll be first goal the winner. But I just think with the Chelsea defeat, I think with the lads having a bit of extra rest, bit of time off, hopefully James coming back in, hopefully fully fit, rested Richarlison. I think a few of the other players will be hungry as well. I think Michael Keane will have a point to prove. I just think the mentality and the level in the squad, so obviously Gabamon coming back in as well, will be a lot higher than it was before the break. So I fancy us to get the 2-0 win. Tight game, but I think we'll get it done, because it's a must win. We've got to do it.
I think the lads not travelling to South America is huge, by the way, you know, because James probably would have gone. You know exactly what he loves playing for his country. So whether he was 100% fit or not, I think he would have gone across. So him not going, Yerry Mina not going, Richarlison, Allen, you know, the key players for us this season. Having, you know, that break just to, you know, knock around at Finch Farm, do some light training, build themselves back up, I think is absolutely key. And I think that will be the deciding factor. James being fit is obviously his quality. You know, for me, on his day, he walks to any side of the Premier League. He's that good. Calvert-Lewin had a decent international break. Obviously scored a couple of goals. So I see an Everton win, but I think it'd be tight. I think it'd be 2-1. I think we will nick it. But I've got a lot of respect for Palace. I've always thought that, you know, on the day they can cause problems for any side, and they have proven that over the years. They've got some real pace and power on the counter attack. So tight game, but I do expect us to nick that win and obviously keep charging towards a European place. But Ali, we're going to leave it there, mate, for the preview of the game. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on, and good luck for the rest of the season. I live in a West Ham area now, unfortunately, by marriage, and I'm really praying you finish above them because they are unbearable at the moment.
Pete, you hate West Ham, don't you, Pete?
Yeah, I'm completely with you. I don't think I'll be able to live it down if we finish below them. I don't think we will, though. I think they'll crumble off. I think they're flaky.
I hope they do, because honestly, all the myths about them that they believe they won the 66 World Cup and they still bang on about it is true. And you know, actually, Palace have finished above them for the majority of the time I've lived here, but this season is horrible. So yeah, just keep going for it, apart from on Monday, obviously. And yeah, say a little prayer that Roy Hodgson's gone by the end of the season for us.
You will.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Good
work. Take care,
mate. Nice one. And we're going to take a short break and we'll be back in about 30 seconds.
For Everton fans everywhere, this is the ultimate football app for you. For match highlights, interviews and the best Everton videos and podcasts, download the Toffees app for free now on the App Store and Google Play.
Welcome back to the Unholy Trinity podcast, where we are going to pick up something which we haven't discussed as we last recorded the podcast there before it was announced, but fantastic news that Bramley Moore has been given full government approval, which is fantastic. Hasn't been called in. We are now pretty much good to go in terms of starting the way actually down the dock itself. And it was news that came pretty much out of the blue, really, on a Friday afternoon. We weren't expecting it probably that quick after we were told it was going to be a little bit delayed, which was expected. And then you hear about all the council going on, council shenanigans and things like that. And the Conservatives getting involved, and obviously the stories kick off about our ground and whether that was going to be involved. But Pete, what was your feeling when that news came out? Because I know myself, I was obviously absolutely delighted by it. You know, it's just something which we've been waiting for this for so long to get the approval to start building work. But what was your feeling? Because I was also a little bit, I'd say, emotional as well, thinking that the countdown to leaving Goodison Park as well and Sully on.
Yeah, mixed feelings. I'd say initially cautiously over the moon, if there's such a feeling. I think it's part of parcel of being an Evertonian, I think, but I'm also the type of person where I probably won't get fully excited until the thing's built and I'm on my way there to see the first game, because you just learn to be that way especially with Everton, with the amounts of ups and downs we've had over the years. But yeah, it looks absolutely phenomenal, doesn't it? It looks, you know, amazing, and it seems to be actually happening. And it's going to completely transform not just Everton, but that part of the city. It's going to create so many jobs. Lots of amazing things are going to happen because of the stadium. And yeah, it will be really sad and emotional to leave Goodison Park. I can't even get my head around what it'll be like to be there for the final game. I mean, it almost feels slightly unbelievable to say that out loud, you know, that we're going to have a last game at Goodison Park. But I think it's amazing that the club are going to sort of keep the stadium as a sort of a totem for the community, you know, that they're not sort of neglecting that part of, you know, sort of L4 of Liverpool that have relied so heavily on the club, for jobs and community. So I think that's Everton through and through, isn't it? They've not done an Arsenal and made it into trendy flats.
Yeah, of course. And I totally, you know, in terms of the Goodison Park legacy, that's for me is as important as Bramley Moore. You know, when you see football clubs leave communities behind and move to new grounds, and like you said, Arsenal built flats at Highbury, and I think West Ham was up the park, was knocked down and built into brand new flats. And you know, I think it's massively important. I think clubs around the country have got a responsibility for the communities that they base themselves in, and they've been in for many, many years, to look after that community. And let's get it right. When Goodison Park does close its doors for the final time and match days are no more, the businesses around that area, around County Road, etc., are going to be massively hit from not having match day revenue for 9 months of the year. So to do what the club are doing and ensuring there's going to be a legacy there for the community, I think is absolutely exceptional and something which the club should take great pride in. But Lee, I'll just come back if I may to your thoughts on when the news was announced as well. And you know, were you the same as Pete? You know, cautiously optimistic or cautiously over the moon, should we say? Or were you fully engaged like me? Because I started doing cartwheels in the kitchen, and I can't do cartwheels, so that was a great sight.
No, mate. I think I mean, you were right. It sort of came out of the blue, didn't it? We know it got referred to government, but we were all kind of quietly confident. The noise is coming out that, you know, that it was going to go through. And certainly, you know, with the year that we've had, you know, in terms of, you know, the pandemic and how that's affected the economy, it's a massive, massive shot in the arm as well for us as a city. Because like Pete just alluded to, it's not just the stadium being built, which will be absolutely amazing for us. It's the jobs that are going to be created in that part of Liverpool as well. You know, that part of Liverpool has laid derelict for a very long time. You know, the fact that now we're going to have a stadium there, there'll no doubt be other businesses that are going to get built around it, whether that's restaurants, hotels. And that's massive for us then, because all along the dock then, you know, it'll be fantastic. Right the way from King's Dock right up to Bramley Moor. So, yeah, you know, it was absolutely amazing news. And like we said as well, it's Goodison Park is for me, you know, iconic. You know, and that's just not being an Everton fan. You know, it just reeks of history, doesn't it, in terms of the teams that, you know, that, you know, have played, even in World Cups and things like that, the players that have played on that surface, our own teams that we've had there. You know, it's going back to the Victorian days. I had a bit of a mini to do, even though I try not to, on Twitter with someone the other day saying that Goodison, he was a journalist from down south, saying that Goodison was effectively a dump, and it had a bit of a to do with him. In terms of, like, you know, understand your history, you know, and understand that the noise that sort of ground generates that very few and far between stadiums do nowadays. And that's the key, one of the biggest keys for me as well, is when we do go to this new stadium. I know Mice has obviously talked about having the blue wave and trying to create that sort of, you know, old-fashioned atmosphere, if you like, and that's massively key. You know, if we can create that stadium and it still holds that noise in, you know, because when it gets going, let's be fair, it's one of the best atmospheres in the country. You know, we've all been to different grounds, and I'd say Goodison, when it's bouncing, is still one of the best out there. It really is. You know, we've all had goosebump moments in that ground. But it'd be, you know, the legacy that we said, it's just typical of Everton. You know, they've already come out and said, look, we could easily sell it to a housing development company, you know, build new houses, flats, you know, even shopping centres, whatever, but we're not, you know, we're actually trying to leave something that's good for the community, and we'll actually make less money in doing so by doing that. And I really commend the club for that, you know, because they could easily flog it off, you know, for more money and use that to inject into the stadium, but they're not. So massive credit there for the club. And I also want to give a big shout out. I know you did, Mike, on Twitter on our account, but big shout out to Farhad Moshiri as well, because the guy's come in, whether you like him or loathe him, you know, all the shouts out, he's a fraud, you know, and all this, you know, absolute rubbish. You know, I mean, the guy's come in, he's cleared the debts. Yes, he's probably made one or two mistakes on the way. We've discussed that. But look, it looks like the jigsaw pieces are slowly coming together now. You know, we've got the manager that we've wanted. We're starting to see the players come in, as our guest has just said there. Now we've, you know, other fans are starting seeing us going up a notch. And then now, you know, the jigsaw is the final piece of the jigsaw is that stadium. And hopefully, as Carlo's alluded to this week, he wants to be the manager and lead that team out at Bramley Moor. Can you imagine what that's going to be like? I mean, you know, if we've got a team, if Carlo's still there, can you imagine what that team's even going to be like?
I think, yeah. And I think I said to you both, I think this is probably the most significant bit of news that a lot of our fans will have actually experienced with us, you know, especially the younger fans. You know, with us not winning Sophie for a very long time, this is a massive, massive piece of news for ourselves and a massive bit of progression that we're going to be taking. I think, I mean, your point about the journalist, I just had a little look at your account to see who it was. I won't name any names. But you know, everyone wants to go and have a little look at the conversation, feel free. But I think it's baffling when I see away fans slag off Goodison Park, because how many teams you've moved in the past, how many people have said they'd love to go back to their old ground because these new grounds aren't like the old grounds, they're not made the same way, they don't bring the same atmosphere. And that's exactly like you say, that Dan Mice has said all the way through, the key to this ground is creating that same atmosphere. So the acoustics have got to be right, and it's being designed with that in mind to keep the sound into the ground and not let it escape, so to speak. And that's what I think we are getting right. It's not like it will be like a soulless ground like the Olympic Stadium, you know, that kind of toilet seat designed stadium. This is a proper football ground for a proper football club. And I think anyone who dismisses Goodison Park, by the way, is an absolute lunatic and shouldn't be conversing with anyone on Twitter. That is for sure. But I think it's so important for us, like you say, the progression of the club, obviously that we're in at the moment, the developments that we're going through. We want to obviously be qualified for Champions League. And, you know, this stadium is going to be the perfect stadium to host European football. Let's get that right. And let's hope that by the time it opens, in hopefully 2024, we are regulars in Europe, qualify for this Champions League. And, you know, one of our first games in the ground could be a Champions League game. Because I think that's what Farhad Moshiri wants. As you said, he deserves massive credit for what he's done since he's come into the club. Mistakes have been made, money is being wasted. That man's been there all the way through and has put his hand in his pocket. And this is part of his vision. He wants to be there. He wants to see it through. He wants us to be challenging at the top of the table. And like you say, this is the final piece of the jigsaw. It's just a case of from now till then is getting the developments of the squad at a particular level where we are fighting on the pitch for Champions League football every single season. But
I mean, if Farhad left after the ground was built, I mean, what a legacy to leave, isn't it? I mean, what a legacy to leave that, you know, because that ground now, that after that, you'd think, you know, would be our ground possibly for the next 100 years. Do you know what I mean? You know, and that's not probably a stupid statement to make either, because that's what they're intended to be, isn't it? So, I mean, it'll be iconic that the fact it's on the river as well, on the River Mersey, you know, and, you know, look at, you know, we've all seen the designs, you know, we'll all be like kids again. You know, I mean, we've all had that moment as kids where we've all walked into Goodison up those steps, you know what I mean? And to be greeted by that noise, and we look at that pitch for the first time, and you know, you get those tingles, you think, oh my God, you know, this is just iconic. And as adults, we're going to walk into this ground and we're probably going to have that same feeling again, aren't we? We're going to be like literally like little kids walking up the steps there and viewing that pitch for the first time. And I literally cannot wait for that moment. I literally cannot wait.
And let's hope Carlo's in charge, because to take a quote from a recent Carlo interview, what he said was in regards to being in charge of the club when we get to Bramley Moor, it'll be a privilege and mean we did well in the final years of Goodison, because this is the only way Everton will ask me to stay. The plan is to keep contact with our community around Goodison. Makes me proud. This is a good example of why I say I found a family at Everton. So it's absolutely fantastic that a manager like Carlo Ancelotti speaks the way he does about the club, the fact that he takes great pride in being a manager of the club, and the fact that he wants to be there when we do move, and for years beyond that. And what he's saying there, Pete, which is great to hear, is that the only way that we're going to ask him, Farhad Moshiri, Bill Kenneth will ask him to stay on beyond his contract, is if he is successful on the pitch. And what a great thing to hear from someone like Carlo Ancelotti, the fact that he knows that over these next few years, he's got to bring some success to the table as well.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, it goes without saying, doesn't it? He's, you know, it's a cliche, but he's here to win something. You know, whether that's, you know, a trophy or, you know, something in Europe. The club's got to be successful. That's what this is all about.
100%. I totally agree with that. I think he's not naive enough to think, oh, I'll still be here because this is my name. This is who I am. He knows that the club has to keep on making those incremental steps, to hopefully, like you've just said, might a Champions League team, hopefully before we move to the new ground, but obviously hopefully in time for it. I really do think, you know, if he is manager and we are making those steps, like I said, that team will be unrecognisable. You know, we'll see a lot of top players in that side by then, hopefully, if we carry on making these moves. Obviously, there's been noise this week and there about FFP changing, maybe for the better, to allow us maybe to get there a bit quicker. Hopefully, that will be the case. We'll see what the new rules come out like. But Carlo made a great statement this week. I don't know the exact, Matt, you've probably got the quote there somewhere, but he said something brilliant, like saying, most football clubs nowadays are like businesses. But he said something like, Everton isn't about that. Everton is about love or something, he said, didn't he? He said something like that, or words to that effect.
Yeah, so what he said, some clubs are like businesses, but not Everton. It is a place full of love.
Yeah. What a comment. I mean, at the same time, some people, obviously most people thought it was a fantastic comment, and I'd fall into that camp, but some people then criticised it going, yeah, but do we want to be a team like that? Or do we want to be a team that's kind of like, is it maybe a little bit more corporate, like a Chelsea, say, or a City now, and then and a bit more ruthless, and a bit more sort of, you know, we win things, but, you know, it's an interesting debate that. Maybe that's one we can have at another time, but that, you know, I thought generally that as a comment, though, Carlo's absolutely spot on with that. What do you think, Pete? Do you agree?
With
that comment, like, most football clubs are like businesses, but Everton is a place full of love, he said.
Well, of course they are. Of course the businesses and the more successful clubs are unlike businesses because, you know, ultimately that's what modern football's become, and the two things go hand in hand, don't they? I mean, it's all about now, you know, recruitment and player development, and, you know, the way that clubs buy now is completely different, isn't it? We've spoken about this a lot with Everton, haven't we? That now, you know, we're looking to buy, you know, a certain caliber of young player. We were quite surprised even at bringing in sort of Alan Decore, given the likes of their sort of age profile. Presumably some kind of conversations taking place there for those signings to be made, because it's probably outside of the ideal recruitment structure for the club. So I think all clubs now looking to be successful are organised around a business model. And there is a secondary cost to that, isn't it? That, you know, you start arguably to move away a little bit from the fans and get a bit isolated from the fans. I think Manchester City are a fantastic club, but they can't fill the stadium at home consistently. And that just blows my mind, because you just wouldn't get that with Everton. You wouldn't get that with Everton, you know, and we're not even challenging for the Premier League. So in a way, you know, yeah, we have to become more business-like to move forward, but I wouldn't say I don't think it's arrogance to say, you know, Everton are a different club and it won't happen to us, but I just think the type of people involved with Everton, I know Bill Kenwright gets a hard time, but I think there's something about the man that, you know, keep something special about who Everton are, and I do think he gets the club and what makes us different.
I think there's got to be a balance, hasn't there, between obviously running it as a business, because of course football's a business. You know, you've got to run your football club. You've got to want to be successful, because if you're successful, you bring more money into the business. It's as simple as that. I think the point in regards to those who weren't maybe too enamoured with the quote, it's probably more to do with there's no room for sentiment in football, which I totally agree with. But what I would say is, as much as, yeah, we need to be ruthless on and off the pitch, of course we do, I don't ever want to lose that sort of family ethos of the club. I don't want to lose how good we are with our community. Obviously, our community as it is now, in and around the Goodison Park, and our new community, I want us to always be a massive part of that and take that responsibility really, really seriously, because I think it's really important, especially in a post-pandemic world. So I think you've got to find the balance, of course, and I think the two can go together and it can be successful. That's my opinion. But like you say, Lee, that's probably do a whole podcast on that with voices from various sides. But I think in regards to, you know, being successful and ruthless, one point that we wanted to bring up on the podcast was the potential change to Champions League qualification going forward, because it coincides with our move to Bramley Moor 2024. And UEFA are looking to expand the competition from 32 to 36 teams. And I think that the biggest sort of point to make on this, for those who maybe haven't heard the news just yet, is there's going to be two wildcard entries based on coefficients, on the club's coefficients. So basically, if you've been successful in Europe historically, then if you finish in the Europa League or Europa Conference qualification spot, or by winning the FA Cup, whatever it might be, you then get last into the Champions League on the fact that you've been successful in previous years. Now, what are our thoughts on that? Because for me, it just takes away the true meaning of a fair competition. Peace.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I completely agree. I think if they're going to, you know, widen the opportunity or have so-called wild cards, that they're moving in the wrong direction with it. You know, why look at, you know, historical performance in European competition? And it's interesting, by the way, who and when decides when history begins. You know, it's recent history, isn't it? You know, only certain clubs are going to benefit from this. You know, if they're going to have wild cards, why not widen it across all European leagues for, you know, I don't know, you know, best overall sort of, you know, coefficient, or the sort of, it's not runner up, is it? But guess like best of the rest, you know, why not open the wild cards up in that sort of way? It seems like it's only going to benefit top teams that for whatever reason slip down a little bit. And I think it's really important for Everton, because, you know, you look at how tight that table is now. You know, yes, City are running away with it this season, but, you know, there's sort of like nine clubs there that arguably, you know, could all fight for a Champions League place, you know, at the start of a new season. You know, the standard of football is incredibly tight now. So if they introduce a rule like this, and I think obviously none of us fully know how it's going to work out, we're all still sort of trying to get our heads around it. But, you know, say if Liverpool, you know, dip out and have a season similar to what they're having at the moment, this rule is only going to benefit them. Mm-hmm. You know, so how are teams going to improve? How are teams going to break in, so to speak, to, you know, challenging for titles or establishing themselves? If you've got sort of a system that is looking to almost keep a status quo, it feels like a bit of a big game to me.
Well, it just reeks. I've said it before off air, and for me, it just reeks of like, you know, the European Super League in a different guise, isn't it? You know, they want, let's be honest, they want those top teams. I say top teams, but they want those same teams in the Champions League. And for me, one of the Champions League in some ways is fantastic. Great watch, you know, most of us watch it. But you do tend to find it's the same teams getting to the same stages pretty much every season. You know, and like you've just alluded to there, Pete, there's probably eight or nine teams in with a shout of European football in the Premier League this season. You know, that's good for the competition, regardless of whether you're an Everton fan or not. And that's where our allegiances, you know, it's good for sport, it's good for the league that there are more and more teams in and around that, because you want a competitive league. You know, I watched a great documentary the other day on Jack Charlton. I don't know whether you guys saw it. Fantastic documentary. What a guy. If you haven't seen it, watch it on BBC. It's on a BBC iPlayer. You know, old school, great player, fantastic manager, talked about his time at Leeds, things like that. But, you know, when he was a player back then, obviously, you know, different teams won the league all the time. You know what I mean? It wasn't just one or two or three teams dominating. We've had this chat briefly before about the Premier League, and, you know, only a handful of teams have won it. You know, and for me, football needs to, you know, it needs to loosen the rules and to allow other teams to compete. You know, and if we can, if FFP does relax a little bit and we can throw more money at it, or Mashiri can, then, and we, you know, that will allow us to suddenly maybe hopefully competing for titles, because, you know, that's what it should be about, football. And in some ways, that's why some fans nowadays, you know, particularly from my dad's generation to that, have kind of almost semi-switched off from it as well. Not a lot of them have, but some of them have. You know, some of them have switched off because, you know, we're never going to win the league, so what's the point? It's some people's attitudes. And, right, you know, whether you agree with that or not. But it's an interesting debate because, you know, if you're going to hand out Champions League football to teams who've had a poor season. I mean, that's not giving it to people on merit. That's just going, well, yeah, actually, I know you've had a, you know, a crap season, but, you know, we want you to be in this Champions League. So, you know, there you go. There's your wild card. I mean, no, I think that's disgusting. And but, you know, are we surprised? You know, we're not in a way, really. We're, you know, trying not to be cynical about it. But, you know, hopefully, if I'm right reading it right, Mike, you know, if we do get into that top four, you still get Champions League football, don't you? It's not going to be taken off someone who comes fourth to be given to someone like Liverpool who comes sixth. Is that right?
That's how it looks. I think the biggest issue that people have taken with this, and rightly so, is this whole wild card issue. And like you said, you've got to be qualified for competitions on merit. You can't just be handed the place because you've done all right in the past. And that just sent out the wrong message. But, you know, they've been pushing for this Super League, haven't they, for quite a while now.
Yeah.
If they had their own way, then they'd all be off doing that. So it's in a way, obviously, it's nowhere near that, but it's still protecting those clubs who have historically qualified for the Champions League, which, as we said, it just defeats the whole object of you know, having an open and fair competition. We know already it's not open and fair, like we said, with FFP and things like that. But hopefully, you know, those rules are looked at and relaxed or restructured, and we can get back to the days where we had more clubs fighting to win league championships and cup competitions and qualifying for Europe and things like that, because that's what everyone wants. You want to go into a season not being sure who the top two are going to be. That's what I want. You could predict, you know, pretty much this season. I know Liverpool have had a shocker, but, you know, you'd be saying the last couple of seasons now it's been Liverpool, Man City, they're your top two. And you don't want that. And I look forward to the day that they do look at FFP. It looks like it's going to come in sooner rather than later. I think probably the pandemic has pushed forward those plans. And it's only going to benefit, hopefully, the clubs like ourselves who are striving to get into those top four places. But yeah, it's a funny one. It's a funny one. But as UEFA are massively corrupt anyway.
Yeah, that's another story. But yeah, for me, like, I like it when teams like that you don't really associate, particularly in recent years, of getting through to the last stage of the Champions League. You know, I really enjoyed watching Ajax, for example, last season, and that team that they put together. You know, Ajax are historically, you know, one of European's giants. You know, they've had some cracking players over the years, like your Cruyffs and your Rijkaards and your Hullets and Van Basten and people like, you know, of course. But, you know, how good was it to watch them? It was refreshing to watch them, wasn't it, play? You know, they put a great team together. You know, some good youngsters coming through. Most of them have moved on now, obviously. But, you know, they had a great run. And really, they should have got to the final. You know, they were Spurs were, you know, massively lucky when they played with them against them. But you know, that season, sorry, when they got there. But I think it was great. Leipzig as well last season had a great run, didn't they? You know, it was great to see them pushing for it. And that's how, for me, that's what you want to see. You want to see, you know, Atalanta again this year done really well. And lucky, obviously, they drew Real Madrid in the last round, but they gave Real Madrid a couple of decent games. You know, they've done some great things in the Champions League last couple of seasons. So I think it's important for football that it's not just the same teams. You look at the, you know, you look at the latter stages nowadays and it is the same names, isn't it? It's your Bayern Munich, your Real Madrid's, City are in there. Obviously, Chelsea are back in there. It's pretty much the same teams that we expect. And, you know, most of us can pretty much call it. And if they avoid each other, you're probably looking at, you know, essentially a Bayern City final, aren't you? You know what I mean? I would say at the minute, if they avoid each other in the draw. But yeah, for me, football needs that. And they need to find that balance between, you know, having other teams competing. Because it's not just our league. You know, you only have to look at the other major leagues. It's the same teams up there every season, isn't it? I mean, it's great to see, you know, it's great to see in France, for example. I know, was it Lille who won today against PSG?
Yeah, PSG.
And they're winning the league, aren't they? They've moved ahead in the league, which is great. Great to see that. You know, you've got PSG, you've got just as much money, if not more, than City. So it's great to see them competing in there. So you know, we'll see. Same in Germany. Germany's quite competitive this season, isn't it? As well. I know Frankfurt are up there again. Eintracht Frankfurt are up there, aren't they? Fighting for Champions League places. So that's good, and that's what we want to see. And you know, the Premier League's been more competitive this year. Is it down to the fact there's no fans? Probably. Yeah, I mean, that's probably played a massive part, the fact that there are 7 or 8 teams up there competing for the Champions League. Will that change next season when the fans come back? We don't know. But let's see what they replace FFP with before we get carried away in terms of whether it'll help us or not, because they'll probably come up with something else, won't they?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And that's certainly going to be a conversation for another day. But let's see how the Champions League story develops. It looks pretty nailed on. Decision made next month, it looks like, as things currently stand. So we'll know more then. But it looks like it is going to change. And let's hope by the time that these new rules come in, we're already qualifying for the Champions League and we're taking Champions League football to our new home of Bramley Moor. But that's us for this week. Great episode. Great to have a guest on in the shape of Ali, the Crystal Palace fan, something we'll look to do again in the future, I'm sure. Looking forward now, obviously, to the game on Monday. And we will be back to look back at that next weekend and look ahead to another Monday night game, I think, against Brighton. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. 3 Blues, 3 Opinions, 1 Everton Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.